I'm Ruth. Welcome to A Quiet Life. It is so great to be here with you. This is episode 70 of A Quiet Life. 7-0, how do we get there? And as I record this, it is Wednesday the 17th of June 2020, after a week off last week. Sometimes the day job gets in the way. I work as an editor, that's where I get money from. And at the moment I'm editing two different theses at the same time, and one is about 76,000 words, and the other one, I'm only doing about 20,000 words of the thesis, but they're keeping me going. There's a deadline for both of them. I have to meet them. It's keeping me busy, and I'm very, very grateful for the work, even though I'm working absolutely flat out, but I'm really grateful. And as I look back over the last 3 months of COVID time, I know that this is not everyone's experience, but I can see how God's carried me through this time work-wise and kept us going. And I'm just really grateful for that. So I hope that as you look back over the past 3 months, you can see his hand guiding you too. And we know that he'll carry us forward into the future. So we can trust him with our lives. And I can really see that in my life, even though at the moment, all I can really see is Microsoft Word documents with track changes scribbled all through them. You know how sometimes when you're really busy, you start dreaming about work? Yeah. It's really fun editing through my dreams. Anyway, this too shall pass, and it's all good. It's all good, really. Something I actually enjoy, editing people's work and bringing order into it, and so I'm glad that I can do that work. Very, very glad. The other thing that is big in my mind right now is my daughter's wedding that happens on Saturday. So Jess is in Canberra, and she'll be married in Canberra, and we're watching a live stream. And I'm sure I've told you this before. I'm feeling quite emotional as the day approaches, mother of the bride and all that. Remembering my baby girl, remembering how glad we were when she was born, how much I really wanted a baby girl at that time, and how grateful I am for her life and how wonderful she is, and thinking about how grateful we are for Jordan. That's her fiancé, soon-to-be husband. He's amazing. Really love you, Jordan. So I'm so grateful for how well he fits with Jess, and it's all good. It's all wonderful, only we can't be there. But we're having a family celebration here, and so as well as just dealing with how emotional I am, I've got details to think about as well, because I'm making a nice lunch for the family. Well, I'm not making it. I'm buying it. I don't know, if you've been listening to my year of saying no, you'll know that food is not my thing. So I thought, let's have everyone over for lunch and someone else can cook. That's the way I do things. It's the way I roll. So I'm thinking details about that, and we're getting some flowers done by a lovely florist friend, and we're going to have a proper celebration here. And I think it's going to be a really lovely day just with our family. So things have opened up a bit here and we could have a bigger party, but I because of the theses and the editing, I'm just not in the place to change plans at this point in time and get more food and whatever, so I'm not going to do that. So we're just going to have family, and we're going to have such a great time and real celebration and watch the video stream of the wedding, and I think it's going to be a really lovely day. Anyway, today's podcast is a chapter from my year of saying no, and it's a chapter on when to push yourself. It's me remembering another incredibly busy time in my life a couple of years ago and how worthwhile that was. And sometimes you just have to work hard, and for me, right now is another one of those times. And so it's hilarious how appropriate this chapter is for me today. I wonder if it's appropriate for you. I'm also going to have the next chapter, which is about wondering, you know, sometimes you wonder when you're not busy whether you're just lazy. And so we've got the two sides of the coin in the next two chapters. But as this is a very busy time in my life, I think I might just sign out and let you listen to the chapter. September. In September, I worked harder than I ever have in my life. Many things coincided. The organisation and hosting of a visiting lecturer at the university, a lab day for my chemistry class, leading the church service one Sunday, the school fair, my supervisor leaving on holiday and putting me in charge of the well-being of three PhD students. I felt overwhelmed and unwell for most of the month. My body stopped relaxing. I had wakeful nights. My brain wouldn't stop thinking. I was always in a state of preparedness for the next big thing. But I got through, and as we reached the end of the month and school holidays came in sight, I breathed a sigh of relief and looked back at the achievements of the month with satisfaction. I realised that when I decided to leave the university, I started to relax more about the work there, to stress less about getting ahead in my career. That relaxation helped me to look at the workplace more dispassionately and to understand how the system worked and what needed to be done to get ahead in that workplace. Temptation came my way in the form of some professors encouraging me to fill out a fellowship application. They were sure I could get funding and that I could stay. But I had decided to leave. I spent a lot of the month wondering how the new thing was going to work and whether I was just kidding myself, living in a fairy tale. Then one day, I woke up believing that I could do it. That I could be a Christian author of non-fiction books on things like time management, and fiction books like murder mysteries. I believed it. Chapter 12. When to push yourself. Earlier this year, I was privileged to host a visiting lecturer to our institution. I have been trying for some time to be an advocate for gender equity in our workplace, and the idea of a women's lectureship was suggested to me, bringing a role model down to Tasmania to encourage our female PhD students. I won't go into all the reasons here, but I jumped at the chance to organise this visit. Professor Michelle Coote agreed to visit with us for a week, and I dived into the organisation. I had no idea just what was required for the hosting of a visiting lecturer. There were the flights and accommodation, of course. I didn't book those, but I did liaise with our office staff to make sure we got it right. Then I had to decide on when to hold the public lecture, when to hold the seminar, when to hold the gender equity forum, and where. And then things got a little more complicated. After choosing a time for the public lecture, booking the lecture room, and making sure that we'd booked it with a little leeway so that we could easily get set up, and advertising on all the university websites and Facebook, and, well, everywhere that I could think of, we found out that we had cleverly booked the lecture room for 7 a.m. rather than 7 p.m. and that the lecture room was already booked for another group at 7 p.m. and that the other booking couldn't be changed. Panic! Then try not to let the panic show and try to calm everyone down and don't let Michelle know that anything had gone wrong with the plan and head for plan B. We had a couple of options for plan B and we went with the lecture room that was available and closest to the original room. The only problems being that, one, it was a much larger room than we really wanted so our crowd would look tiny, and two, it was booked right up until our opening time and the group before us would be having wine and cheese in the foyer as our attendees were coming into our wine and cheese-less lecture. But it was the best available option, so we went with it. The night arrived. However, the pizza that we had ordered to eat for tea in between work and the lecture did not arrive, so I was fairly hungry. What did arrive was the rain and the bitter cold, which made me wonder if any audience members would decide to arrive. But we battled on. The lecture happened, and it went well, of course. Michelle is a professional, and her research is fascinating. We had a reasonable audience, more than 5 anyway. We even managed to pick up a couple of attendees from the wine and cheese event. They came and sat in our lecture with their glasses of wine and hopefully learned something about self-healing polymers and solar cells. The next day was the Gender Equity Forum and I was busy buying cakes and snacks to encourage people to come and trying to fit that in around my regular work. And the day after that was the seminar that I was also chairing and the lunch afterwards. It was a busy week. I didn't have time to breathe. There was definitely no work-life balance that week, no gaps between appointments, no time to evaluate whether or not this or that was what I wanted to do. But I am very glad I took on the challenge. Really grateful for the opportunity and the lessons learned. The term work-life balance can sound static, like it's a set point that we're trying to find that we can set our thermostat to and have the same balance all the time. But life isn't static. Even when our days are good, life has its ups and downs. Maybe it's better to try and find a work-life rhythm than a work-life balance. No, that idea isn't my own, but I can't remember where I heard it first. As a normal way of being, I think it is right to build margin into our days, to set aside time to follow our goals, to build in some downtime, to make sure we have some peace. But sometimes it is right to push ourselves, to squeeze more into our days, to stretch a little outside our comfort zones, to try to reach a little bit further. Some days bring us an opportunity to work hard and be busy and go for it a bit. And the margin and the self-care built into the regular times will give you the energy to push yourself when it is necessary. I guess the question is, how do you tell which are the good moments to push yourself and which are the extras where we should say no? I don't know the total answer to this, of course. You are you and I am me, and what we need to decide are two different things. But there's a few things we can think through when making this kind of decision. One is to get a reasonable estimate of the amount of time we have to give to the project. This takes practice, of course. I had no idea how much time would be swallowed by Michelle's visit, but I know now. I was very grateful that my other projects could be shunted to the side somewhat when Michelle was down so that I could give the lectureship the time it required without totally burning out. I think I could have helped myself with the time management by finding someone else who had done something similar and asking them for an estimate. Another question is to ask whether this event will bring you closer to your life goals or whether it's just busy work. If you find your day is regularly getting built in by endless tasks that don't seem to get you anywhere that you want to go, then maybe it's best to start delegating or organising or somehow getting that busy work off your plate. Easier said than done, I know. But if you don't even recognise the problem, then you're unlikely to find any answers. And finally, are you doing this out of selfish ambition? Is the only reason you're taking on this event or project that the outcome will make you look good? I know that some of my readers might not like the fact that I'm making a distinction here, but I'm all about going for it to reach your goals, ambition, but really not into doing it to make you look good to others. Selfish ambition. Working yourself to death because it makes you look good to others is a really bad idea in my book. Anyway, to summarise, yes, I think there are good reasons to push yourself sometimes, but I also think that these should be short-term sprints and not a way of life. And I would hope that they are in service of others. October. The clouds started to clear. The semester finished with only exam marking to go. The countdown on my calendar was over. Then the grief hit. Halfway home after giving my last lesson, I started to cry, and the tears just didn't stop. University life was my big dream and desire for a long time, and I needed to say a proper goodbye to that dream before picking up the next one. My cousin helped me by saying, "Remember that choosing not to pursue this path anymore does not invalidate what it gave you." Solid advice. But at the same time as I was filled with grief, I felt like I was entering the promised land. All those scriptures really rang true. As you enter the land, be careful that you do not forget the Lord. My brain started to fill with the things I could do in my new lifestyle. Writing, an editing business, time with family and friends, working around the house, exercise. Would there be enough time in the day to do all that? Would I now have the energy? I was ready to go. Let's get started on the new thing. Surely now I can start. But no, not yet. There were still work hours that needed to be completed, still jobs to do. And lastly, in this very emotional month, I was scared, begging God, please let this work, please, please, and talking myself back from the edge of terror by telling myself that I hadn't started yet, that I knew what to do, that I was very productive in my half holidays. I wasn't sure whether to be stressed or relaxed, happy or sad. The only thing I was sure about was that I was still tired. Chapter 13. Am I just lazy? I've talked a lot about saying no to things, about having days alone when my introvert self can recharge, about saying no to some requests and not even feeling guilty, about leaving some church or work activities to others, about rewarding myself for telling people no, about making sure that I'm not too busy and that I have time to do the things that really matter to me. And all of this is good, at least I think it's good, and that's why I'm sharing it with you. But there's often a bit of a nagging worry in the back of my mind. I ask myself, am I just lazy? I mean, if I compare myself to my friend Naomi, who runs her own tutoring business, then I definitely look lazy. She works from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. tutoring schoolchildren, and then spends her evenings writing reports and such. She's amazing. Or how about my friend Megan, who gets up at dark o'clock to go jogging before getting her kids off to school and then going to work herself. She also looks after her elderly mother and helps out at church things. But I'm sure I could compare myself to others who have different priorities or different health levels to me and think that I'm doing pretty well. Comparisonitis, Joanna Penn calls it. It's a deadly disease, sure to stop any endeavour. It's a seriously bad idea to compare your life to another's. The very best it can do is puff you up with pride, and that's not a good thing. It is more likely to destroy you as you try to meet some unattainable ideal. So how then do you figure out if you are making the best use of the time and energy levels that you've been given in your day? I found some very good advice in Christine Rush's book, Goals and Dreams. She says to set a daily goal and try to achieve it for a week. If you never reach the goal, figure out if the problem is that you weren't putting in enough time, that you didn't have enough time to give, or if the goal is just too hard to achieve in a single day for you. Then set a new goal and try that for a week. Work until you find one you have to stretch just a little to achieve, but make sure it is one you can achieve. I think this is fantastic advice. It requires being honest with yourself, but that's a good thing too. I am really blessed in that I have a husband who will be honest with me. He sees what I do and what I don't, and he can give me feedback to let me know whether I'm being lazy or whether I'm taking a well-deserved break from some hard work. Sometimes it's just so helpful to have someone else say, "No, rest, you deserve it." But even in my incredibly blessed situation, I can feel like he's not seeing the full picture and that I'm just being lazy. So I also need to self-assess, to set goals I can reach in a day, in a week, and to constantly reassess. I love how Rush says that goals can be reassessed on a constant basis. What works 1 week or month may not work the next. If you are reaching goals too easily, then you may need to set the bar higher. If you are never achieving your goals and just getting frustrated, then you may need to lower your expectations of yourself for this season and this energy level. Just because you set a goal for yourself doesn't mean it's set in stone. Just like pilots are constantly correcting their course when flying a plane or piloting a ship, we also need to constantly correct our life course and make sure we're on track. Reassess, realign, set another goal, and try to reach it. It can be good to have someone to be accountable to, someone to whom you have stated your goal and will report back to. That may help you keep honest, so that you're not kidding yourself about your energy levels or time commitments. You need someone who can hold up a mirror to you that is not too distorted and can help you to see the truth about yourself. So are you just lazy? Am I? I think the answer is so much more complex than that. I love productivity books. Like, I really love them. I think I read them more than I read novels, maybe. I love any book with a journal, pen, and cup of coffee on the cover. It's an addiction, really. I'm not sure that it's healthy. What if I'm reading these productivity books just because by reading them, I can feel like I'm being productive without actually doing anything? The interesting thing is that when I started writing the series of blogs that eventually became this book, I realised that I didn't need to set aside time to do a whole lot of research. I had already done the research as I read all the productivity books. I could now just put it all together, put my take on it, and make a series of my own. I think it's easy to feel lazy when you're spending time doing things you love doing. I love to read. If I spend the day reading a book, I feel very lazy and unproductive indeed. But for others, the exact same day would have been a day of hard work. I can write 1,000 words and again feel like I've done nothing. I love to write. But as I do that day after day, I can put together a book and others will feel like I've been very productive. Doing what you love is not necessarily laziness. Doing something just for fun is not necessarily a waste of time. Laziness is such a subjective thing. Recovery is another thing that masquerades as laziness, but isn't. As I write this, I am sitting on my couch recovering after attending the Ollieballen Festival. The Ollieballen Festival, for those of you who don't live in Kingston, Tasmania, is our school fair. It's quite a big one as school fairs go. I once read a tourist book that mentioned two things about my town of Kingston, the Australian Antarctic Division and the Ollieballen Festival. There is a display of vintage cars on the Oval, there are sideshow rides, the Navy Band often comes and plays for us, there is the bookstall, the white elephant, the auction, the plants, the baby animals, and of course, the food. Ollieballen are Dutch donuts, deep-fried dough with fruit dotted through and sprinkled with icing sugar. Very much an annual treat for me. So I went to the festival, But I knew that after a couple of hours or so at the fair, I would need to spend quite some hours chilling out. The festival is fun. It's loud. There are heaps of people to say hello to, and afterwards I need to stop and sit in a quiet place. I've come back home and sat on the couch. I might stay here for a while. It's not just festivals that make me feel tired like this. I'm like this after church. I'm like this after judging a poster session at the Graduate Research Conference. I'm like this after Uni Open Day. I'm like this after every large event. I even feel tired after giving a lecture, and that has been part of my job at least 2 days a week for 26 weeks of the year. I have seen a meme that says, adult life is just telling each other how tired we are until one of us dies. So I know that I'm not the only one who feels tired most of the time. Some of my issue is health related, and I've spent a fair bit of time looking into that. And some of it is introversion. Time with people is tiring, and I need time alone to recharge. The thing is, the recharge time is necessary for me. It's not me being lazy or not coping. It's the fact that if I don't take the time to recharge, then I will end up not coping at all. As part of my time budget, I need to book in recharge time after an event. And when I look at what I'm saying yes to and what I'm saying no to, I need to take into account the number of people at the event and how exhausted I'm likely to be afterwards. It's not slackness, it's just the way it is. One of the comments on my blog reminded me that we learn that the busier we are, the better we are as people, and suggested that we could look at the example of the countercultural life of Winnie the Pooh. I totally agree, though I'm not talking the Disney version. The original A.A. Milne books poke gentle fun at our self-importance and busyness. Rabbit holds a mirror to our lives and asks, is it really that important? And Winnie the Pooh and Piglet show us that friendship and a little smackerel of something might be the most important thing of all. I hope you enjoyed that chapter from my year of saying no. You can find the book in ebook or print form. Just go to ruthamos.com.au and you can get links to find it there. I wonder where you're at. I wonder if you are pushing yourself this week, or if you're recharging, or if you're assessing your activities to see if they're just busy work. Let me know. You can write to me, ruth@ruthamos.com.au. You can find me on Facebook, Ruth Amos Author, or on Twitter, @aquietlife, though you're going to have much less chance of actually getting my attention on Twitter, I'm afraid. Next week, I am actually not sure what's going to be on the podcast next week. I'm trying to line up some interviews, and if they don't work out, I will give you another chapter from my year of saying no. Special thanks to Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music, and I'll chat with you again next week.